First meeting of the Legacy Funding Finance Committee to order. Good to see all you people. And with that, we should probably introduce ourselves and then we'll introduce the staff. Start with you, Steve.
Mr. Chair, Steve Green, Representative for District 2B.
Mike Freiberg, District 45B.
Dario Insomma, District 49A.
Bob Genther, District 23A.
Sandy Lehman, District 5B.
Leon Lilly, 43B.
Dean Erdahl, 18A.
Anna Wills, District 57B.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul Torkelson, 16B.
And Jean Wiginius, representing parts of South Minneapolis and Richfield.
It's good to have you all here. It's good to be on the same committee with you. And with that, how would you like to introduce the staff, since you know all our names?
Oh, we can each go around and introduce ourselves.
We just did. Oh, yeah. Staff introduce themselves? Okay, yeah. Go for it. You don't know their names either, huh?
I mean, I know. Hi, I'm Callie Lehman. I'm the committee administrator.
Rebecca Mead, the committee legislative assistant.
Janelle Taylor with House Research.
Mary Mullen with House Research.
Brad Hagerman with House Fiscal Analysis Department.
John Walls, House Fiscal Analysis.
Jeremiah Wingstead, Republican Caucus Research.
I'm Nancy Conley with DFL Research.
Good to be with you again, Nancy. And with that, we introduced committee. Okay, committee expectations and goals. I think they're all on the sheet for you. Okay, the committee rules are in the folder. There's a 24-hour amendment rule, given that our hearing is on Monday. The 24-hour deadline will be Friday at 1 o'clock. Preferred to focus on land easements as opposed to land acquisition. One of the reasons I did, I read in the legislative audit report that the DNR is having a funding crunch. They're short $6-point-some million behind in taking care of the state parks. And I think I would like to see easements where people will pay the taxes and maintain the land. I think it's things that basically your various groups want to have. I think that they're willing to take care of it themselves. And if they receive money before, they must provide a detailed accounting of where the money was spent, and it affected, added to Minnesota's legacy. I think it's fair if we give them money, they tell us what they did with it and how well they're doing it. For those requesting money, either again or for the first time, they must provide detailed accounting of where the money will be spent and how it will affect Minnesota's legacy. Goals for the bill is to have it be a politically and geographically balanced bill. Nonpartisan staff, they introduce themselves. First up, huh? Yeah, they're first up. We have the legislative auditor who.
Nonpartisan
first? Okay. Nonpartisan presentation of the Legacy Committee. We'll start out with Janelle Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we were tasked to just kind of provide a brief overview of the legacy amendment, the four funds, and sort of the process, very succinct process on what has been used to date. So I'm going to try to be fairly brief, and I think looking ahead, there's probably going to be some repetition of this information. But hopefully that'll ingrain it all in your heads here. So first of all, what is the legacy amendment? For some of you have been around a while, but it is an amendment that was passed by the voters in 2008, which increased the state's sales tax by 0.3%, and then dedicated those revenues to four different funds for a period of 25 years. The amendment does require that these funds supplement traditional sources of funding, so basically prohibiting it from becoming a substitute. When the legislature first began working on the legacy amendment, they did require a 25-year plan for each of the four funds, and these plans have been, in some varying degrees, been used by those using the funds to direct where those funds would go. The first fund I'm going to talk about is the Outdoor Heritage Fund. This fund receives 33% of the revenues. That has averaged about $98 million over the past three fiscal years. And those funds are required to be used to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. There is also a provision that would require that lands purchased with the fund be open to public hunting and fishing unless otherwise provided by law. When the amendment passed, it also sort of enacted legislation establishing the Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. This council is tasked with providing recommendations on how to use the funds. It's made up of 12 members. There are four legislators. Some of them, the members here, have served on the council. And then eight citizens, and those are appointed by the governor in the House and Senate. The council typically puts out a request for a proposal and then selects projects to come in and present, and then that from those applicants, they kind of put together an annual funding bill, and their recommendations are due January 15th each year, and they have completed their work for this next fiscal year. As part of the legislation that created the council, there's also some additional statutory requirements on the use of the funds, including the establishment of a conservation partners program. Each year, the council has recommended funding for a conservation legacy grant program, and lately it's been averaging about $8 million. The remaining of the funds have typically gone to the DNR for land acquisition, restoration, and enhancement work. The Board of Water and Soil Resources for conservation easements, like the Rim Reserve Program, and then to various nonprofits for conservation work like Pheasants Forever, Trout Unlimited, Ducks Unlimited, etc. And that kind of the brief summary for Outdoor Heritage Fund. The next is the Clean Water Fund. This fund also receives 33% of the revenues, again, approximately $98 million a year. And it must be used to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams, and to protect groundwater from degradation. There's also a provision that requires at least 5% of the funds to be used to protect drinking water sources. There's another council that is tasked with providing recommendations for the use of the funds. This has been required since 2001, but the council actually predated the legacy amendment. But they have been providing recommendations since the beginning. That council has kind of gone through various iterations, but currently has about 28 members, including 17 voting members, and they're appointed by the governor. And then there's 11 non-voting members. I think there's seven different state entities that are represented, and then there's four legislators that also serve. The council's process is a little bit different than the Lasard's process. They typically make recommendations for programs at the state agencies rather than individual projects, and they kind of base those recommendations based on input from the agencies. And they're required to put out a report that the council to the legislature and the governor, and that's for the biennium, and those recommendations are then used by the governor and the legislature to craft the budget. Historically, the money has been going to those member agencies that sort of sit on as non-voting members. The money that's largely goes for protection or restoration activities through grants through Bowser, and then it also supports work at the PCA and the DNR on their assessment and protection efforts. The final one I'm going to talk about is the Parks and Trails Fund. It receives 14.25% of the revenues, which is averaging about $42 million a year, and it must be used to support parks and trails of regional or statewide significance. Unlike the other funds, it doesn't have a permanent council. However, those of you who have been around a while remember that it was kind of contentious in the beginning, so in 2011, the legislature required DNR to put together a working group to sort of help recommend how much money should go to like three major areas, which was the state parks, the metro parks, and then Greater Minnesota. And that working group came back with some recommendations for a 40-40-20 split that you'll probably hear referenced quite a bit. 40% goes, and you know, since then 40% has gone to the DNR for their state parks, state rec, and state trails. 40% has gone to the Met Council for the metro parts, and that's distributed via a formula and statute. And then 20% has been remains for the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. And initially, there wasn't, there's just some minor statutory guidance on how to distribute the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails money, but then in 2013, Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission was established to provide recommendations on how to use those funds, and that's sort of been going on since, and their recommendations are out as well. And those are the typical natural resource funds, and they usually go through the Environment and Natural Resources Committee prior to ending up in this committee, and I'm happy to provide any additional information if people have it. And then Mary's going to talk about the arts.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Mary Mullen with House Research. The final fund that we haven't discussed is the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. It receives 19.75% of the legacy tax revenue, and it is for arts, arts education, arts access, and to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. Unlike the other funds, there has not been a permanent council or other group established to make recommendations for the use of these funds. So the legislature has based their funding decisions largely on input and recommendations from stakeholders and proposals that they've brought to the legislature. It's been distributed to many different public and private groups. Some state agencies and private institutions have received funding in consecutive years, some one-time funding. The funding goes for various programs and projects that have been proposed, but a lot of the funding also goes for competitive grants that gets it out there to other organizations that haven't been selected by the legislature. The funding in the last biennium was a little bit over $60 million per year. Some of the grants that have been awarded have gone to museums, radio and television, arts organizations, educational opportunities in arts, history, and culture, the zoos, American Indian programs, and historical preservation. There is a statute that relates to each of the four funds, and the statute for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund is the 129D. And one of the things that the statute relates to is the distribution of certain types of grants and how those granting opportunities work. So if you have any questions about the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, we're always happy to answer them.
Are there any questions from the members for either one of these testifiers? I look over here, most of the members of this committee have been here before, so it must be a great committee to be on. Thank you very much. Next we have Legislative Auditor Review. Please come forward and tell us all the wonderful things you have researched and found out.
Mr. Chairman. Well,
I'd like to also tell everybody we have Paul Thiessen here.
Hi.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
His name tag was over here.
I got it here.
For reasons.
Good to have you here. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. With me at the table on the far end is Judy Randall, who is the deputy legislative auditor for the Program Evaluation Division. And next to me is Cecile Furkel, who is deputy legislative auditor for the Financial Audit Division. And they're both going to speak to you this morning. I have just a few opening remarks. We are very familiar with the work of this committee and have been here with many of you many times talking about the legacy amendment. And we've done that because in 2008, when the people of the state of Minnesota adopted the amendment, we realized that we all in state government were going to have some new responsibilities. The people of the state said they wanted to increase the sales tax for some very specific reasons, and those were enshrined in the constitutional amendment itself. And so you as a legislature have serious responsibility, but sometimes kind of a fun responsibility too, to decide who gets the money. Of course, that also goes with deciding who doesn't get the money, and that sometimes is a real challenging decision, I know. State agencies were given a lot of responsibility to administer the funds. But the Office of the Legislative Auditor also was given responsibility because, after all, these are state funds in the state treasury, and we are the auditor of state government. And so we knew we had a lot of responsibility. And so we have tried to fulfill that responsibility in various ways. First, we tried to take a large, kind of broad view of the amendment, and we issued this report in 2011. And for those of you who are new, and a few of you are, this will serve, I think, as a primer. Judy Randall is the author of this report, and she's going to talk to you about it, so I won't cover much more of it. But I think it both really gives you a good description of the amendment, the money, how the various advisory committees work, but also it highlights what we consider to be four ongoing issues. And we said that they were ongoing issues back in 2011, and I think they're still ongoing issues, and we'll be probably talking about some of them today. One of the reasons why I think the legacy amendment really means a lot to us as an audit organization, because there are, with these kinds of monies, strings attached. And whenever there are strings attached, there's a lot of compliance work to be done. The strings are the requirements are first in the Constitution. Then they're in the statutes, and you've codified some provisions in statute. But then sometimes they're in the appropriation laws as well, as riders. And so our job, particularly in our financial audit division, is to go in and, as an agent of the legislative branch, do audits, do evaluations, do investigations, and determine whether or not people are using the money, both in compliance with the constitutional provisions, but also the statutory provisions that you enact and the riders that you put in each appropriation sometimes. So that's really the essence of our job. One of the things that some of you who are a bit newer to the legislature might want to know, that the Office of the Legislative Auditor has significant authority. We do have the authority to see all documents and data regardless of classification, and we also in law have the authority to trace public money even into private organizations. And one of the things that you will hear, already heard, is that a good deal of this money from the legacy funds goes to private nonprofit organizations. And it's public money, just like if it went to DNR or any other state agency, and the same requirements apply. And so we have the authority to go into any public, any private, nonprofit organization and determine whether or not they've spent the money in compliance with all the legal requirements. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I think I'm going to first turn it over to Judy Randall, who is going to give you a broad overview and cover the 2011 report that we issued.
Welcome to our committee, Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for OLA's Program Evaluation Division. And hopefully you all received either your first or 15th copy of this report, depending on how long you've been on this committee. And some of what I am going to say will be a repeat of what the House Research staff said, so I'll just try to skip through it fairly quickly, but feel free to stop me if you have questions. So we issued that report in 2011, as Mr. Noble said, to take kind of a first-pass look at the legacy amendment and provide kind of this good overview background for legislators and really for all the stakeholders here as we go forward in this new venture. The constitutional amendment was passed in 2008, and as House Research staff said, it raised the state sales tax by 3/8 of 1% and allocated that money for specific purposes. For fiscal year 2017, the legislature appropriated more than $334 million through legacy funds. So we're talking about a significant amount of money each year. And as you know, the constitutional amendment was approved for 25 years, so at least under the current law in the amendment, it is slated to end June 30th of 2034. Now, as Janelle and Mary went through, the legacy amendment established four funds, each with specific purposes. So we'll just go through them one by one. Outdoor Heritage Fund receives 1/3 of the money raised through that sales tax. And the purposes outlined in the Constitution are to restore, protect, and enhance basically lots of different habitat, wetlands, prairies, forests for different types of wildlife, fish, and game. The Clean Water Fund receives 1/3 of the money. And the purpose of that fund is to protect, enhance, and restore water quality, whether it's surface water, groundwater, drinking water. The remaining 1/3 of the money raised through the constitutional amendment increased sales tax is split then between the Parks and Trails Fund and the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Parks and Trails receives 14.25% of the money raised, and it's dedicated to supporting parks and trails of regional and statewide significance. And then finally, Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund receives the remainder of the money raised, and the purposes there are for arts education, and preserving Minnesota's history. So I just breezed through that. I think you're hearing this several times. Again, there's more information on all of this in that 2011 report that you all have a copy of as well. So there are a lot of differences among the four funds that are, I think, important to know as you work through this session and as you work through the different requests that are going to come before you this year. So first is the presence of advisory groups. Two of the funds, the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Clean Water Fund, both have advisory groups. The Lessard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council is the advisory group for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and then the Clean Water Fund is the advisory group for the Clean Water Fund. So what does this mean? It means that they are kind of doing a preview, a vetting of different projects and programs that are proposed to receive funding from the legislature through the Legacy Fund. The Parks and Trails Fund and the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund do not have these types of broad oversight or broad advisory groups. And so you're going to be hearing more from individual groups for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund rather than from a council that maybe has is looking at the whole fund as a whole. A second difference is how the money for each of the funds is kind of ultimately allocated. And Ms. Taylor alluded to some of this when she talked about how the Parks and Trails Fund money is allocated. The money for the Parks and Trails Fund is kind of allocated in more of a formulaic way, the 40-40-20 allocation. In contrast, the money for, let's say, the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund is allocated more to the Arts Board and the Historical Society, which then allocates that money further out through competitive grants often. Again, in contrast, you have the money for the Outdoor Heritage Fund, where a lot of that money is initially appropriated to DNR, but really specified in law for specific projects that the legislature thinks is important and relates to the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So again, the way the money goes out through your committee is going to be different for these different funds, and it's kind of based on the structures that are already in place, both with the advisory groups and then just the history that was in place before the Legacy Amendment was passed in 08. Kind of along with this is that there's different types of oversight of the funds and how they're used. The money through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, for example, that's really allocated out through the competitive grants, largely by the Arts Board or the Historical Society, those granting agencies are providing a lot of that oversight. For the Clean Water Fund, a lot of that money is going out to state agencies to do program work that the agencies have been doing. So a lot of that oversight just happens within the agency. The Outdoor Heritage Fund, the Lessard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council is providing a lot of that oversight. So again, you know, we're saying legacy funds, but really there's four different funds and they have different history and different practices within. And, you know, as you go along in your work throughout the year, you know, you will see that. So there's these differences. But then as Mr. Nobles mentioned, we found four kind of what we're calling ongoing concerns that are these kind of common threads that ran through all four funds, even despite their differences. So I'm just going to touch on those briefly. The first one relates to conflicts of interest. And of course, this is something that's always a concern when we're allocating the public's money. And for the legacy funds, there's a lot of input and influence from different groups. And so I think being aware of conflicts of interest that people may have is always important. When we did this evaluation in 2011, we had some specific concerns related to conflicts of interest related to the Clean Water Council. They responded to our recommendations, and so we no longer have a specific concern related to Clean Water Council. But I left this on the slide just because it's always something to kind of keep at the top of mind when you're dealing with the people's money. The next kind of ongoing concern, and I'll just kind of also caveat that all of these ongoing concerns are tricky. They're hard to deal with, and there's not easy answers. And so that's going to be kind of a common message you hear from Ms. Ferkel and I, that these are things that we think the committee is really going to be struggling with. Sorry. But we think it will be a struggle throughout the session, and it's just something really to kind of pay attention to and raise the antenna when you hear these things. So, of course, we all want good outcomes from the legacy money. I mean, I think when the people passed the amendment, they wanted outcomes. But what counts as an outcome may, I may think something's an outcome and you may think something's an outcome, and we may have disagreements about what's a good enough outcome, what counts as an outcome. So first, it's just agreeing on what we want to achieve through this money. And then the question is, how do we measure that? And how do we measure that that outcome happened because of the legacy money and not because of maybe other money that we've contributed to these projects or because of other things that are happening? I will note in your packet, I believe you have a project description for an evaluation we're doing right now called Clean Water Fund Outcomes. We'll be releasing that evaluation in this session, hopefully in a month or so. And I don't think I'll be giving too much away if I, you know, we're still drafting it, so it's not final, but I don't think I'll be giving too much away to say it's tricky to measure Clean Water Fund outcomes, to agree what the outcomes are, what counts as an outcome, and then also how do we know it's because of the Clean Water Fund that a river is cleaner or isn't more polluted? How do we attribute that just to Clean Water Fund, and how do we... Well, I'll leave it at that. So stay tuned on that. I'm sure we'll be happy to present that report to your committee when that's ready. But it's an ongoing concern, this issue of outcomes. The next ongoing concern, and again, I think Ms. Taylor commented on this one, is the requirement in the Constitution that the money, that the legacy money supplement but not substitute for traditional sources of funding. And this is something that we've struggled with. I know folks who receive the money have struggled with. I know the legislature has struggled with this. I mean, really, it's not clear how to comply with this provision. So the amendment requires legacy funds to supplement and not substitute for traditional sources of funding. I think, you know, one of the key questions is what constitutes as a traditional source of funding, and what happens when there are changes to those traditional sources of funding that are outside of the legislature's control, but that affect an agency or entity that's receiving legacy money. It gets convoluted and twisted and hard to track. And where we landed in this report is that really everybody needs to be vigilant about this and be transparent about their sources of funding, what programs they are asking for legacy money. All right, I'm getting boxed up myself even just talking about it. For what programs are they asking for legacy money? And then are those new programs or new projects, or did they do them before? And if they did them before, how were they funded before? So at least the legislature can get some historical information. I hope, I don't know, did that make sense? Yes, mostly. I think it's a confusing and tricky topic. But the more information that you all could have about how projects have been funded, we think the better. Now, last year, the legislature did require some additional reporting for folks, for agencies and organizations that were requesting appropriations from two of the funds, from the Parks and Trails and from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Funds. And so that, we think, is a good step in terms of having more information, more transparency about where money has come for these projects in the past, if they're new projects. If it's an existing project but they're asking for legacy money, how is that justified? Are we doing the project faster? Are we doing more of the project? Things that get at supplementing rather than supplanting the legacy or traditional sources of money. I'm going to move on because it's complicated. I would be happy to answer more questions about that one, but I can't guarantee I'll make more sense. Sorry. The last of the four ongoing concerns is related to administrative expenses. And this is a point where agencies have been unclear with how to comply with the limits on administrative expenses. The way the law is structured now, it requires administrative expenses to be, quote, directly related to and necessary for legacy-funded activity. And some agencies have wanted to use their indirect cost allocation rate to pay for some legacy-related funds or projects. And so this is an area actually where our financial auditors have really dug in deep as part of their financial audits and looked at the use of administrative expenses for legacy-funded projects. So at this point...
Representative Erdahl has a question.
Oh, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not necessarily a question, but just to comment on these four things that certainly have been a bit of a conundrum for us since the beginning. And you have been addressing some of the changes that we did make through our consultation with you and with Mr. Nobles. The first one, the conflict of interest. As you say, you dealt with that, and it was a clean water fund that was of particular concern, and we have maintained, you know, at least concern about the other components, but that has not arisen. Achieving the outcomes, you know, that's something that is ongoing. We try to, you know, make sure that the outcome is reached. The third one, we did, as you say, last time, have an amendment or a part of our bill that specified that if you are receiving money, if those two groups are receiving money, they have to tell us how it was spent before. And finally, and the administrative cost gets into the percent. At one time, there were 10%, and then, you know, we change that, and then you have groups saying that they can't do it at that percent, and different groups with different problems with that. And so, again, with Mr. Noble's suggestion, we came up with the term directly related to and necessary for, with the caveat that if that were abused, we would likely just put a hard percent on and say that's what it's going to be. So we left some discretion with that, believing that, you know, that was the fairest way to go.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I think that's a much more succinct recap of what's happened than me stumbling around talking about supplements of plant, which I'm glad you didn't ask a question about, by the way. And I know that the committee has struggled with this over time, and I think you're right. The committee has made some really good steps. You know, as you said, the conflicts of interest, I think, is mostly resolved, although, again, we have to stay vigilant. Same with outcomes. And the changes last year related to the supplement, not substitute, I think are good. And I think they'll lead to more transparency and more information for this committee. And yes, we have struggled, the committee, and I know we've been involved in those conversations on how to handle this, the administrative expenses. And we tried the percentage, and then that didn't seem to work. And now we're trying the directly related to and necessary for. And that has been difficult. And that's a place where I think there's not a lot of agreement right now on how that works and how that's being implemented. And at this point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn to Ms. Ferkel, who is the Deputy Legislative Auditor for Financial Audit, and they have really dug in deep to this area and I think would be the best person to speak on it for OLA.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Cecile Ferkel, the Deputy Legislative Auditor. You have in your packet a little grid that shows the extent of our audit work over the past years. Starting in 2010, we started with an audit at the State Arts Board, and what I want you to see from this table is that we have done audit work across all of the funds, across all the entities that receive that legacy money. And we have taken different approaches. Every time we start an audit, we say, what do we want to look at this time? Sometimes we focused on an agency and looked at all of their expenditures, not only for the legacy funds, but also for other dedicated funds. For example, we have done an audit of the Department of Natural Resources, where we looked at Game and Fish Fund and Wild Turkey Fund and also Clean Water Fund and also Outdoor Heritage Fund and also Parks and Trails Funds, and looked at how they were administering those programs, paying for those costs, overseeing those grants, allocating costs. Sometimes we've taken that kind of a look. Sometimes we've taken a look at a fund. We did an audit of the Clean Water Fund, and we looked at how DNR was spending that money, how the Board of Water and Soil Resources was spending that money, and also how Pollution Control was spending that money. So we've taken different looks at the legacy funds to always give it a fresh approach and see, you know, how the money is being used. We have issued 15 audit reports. There are two that are coming out in the next week or so, one for the Purpich Center of Arts Education that examined, among other things, their use of arts and cultural heritage money, and also a report coming out for the Department of Natural Resources in the next few weeks about their use of Outdoor Heritage Fund money. So through those 15 audits, we issued 36 findings that related to legacy, the use of legacy money. And there are really two key areas where those findings focused. and 15 of them related to grants oversight. A lot of this money does flow through state agencies to grantees that are perhaps nonprofits or other stakeholders in the environment, and so we felt that grant oversight is a really key area. 15 of the findings were in deficiencies in grant oversight. 13 of the findings related to the directly related to a necessary for requirement in how entities that we were auditing were allocating costs to the programs to ensure that those costs were directly related to a necessary for. So I'd like to go into that just a little bit more. Back to the grants oversight, the state has a department, Office of Grants Management within the Department of Administration, and they established back 8-10 years ago a suite of policies for grant oversight for state agencies. And so when we do our audits, we're auditing to those policies, and as this legacy money has gone into and then out of state agencies, it's been a really dramatic effect on some entities, like the Arts Board. That was a real increase in the amount of money that they had for their grants. So grant oversight and compliance with those policies became more and more important. DNR also a big grantee of legacy money, so grants oversight really was a focus there. And I'm happy to say that we are seeing improvement in grants oversight. Some of the difficulties we saw early on, we're seeing the departments really take an aggressive approach and really be serious about making sure that they are overseeing how these grants are being used and deployed. I'm not saying all issues are resolved, but I'm saying that we are seeing improvement in those areas. In the directly related to a necessary for requirement, the main sticking point really is in how administrative costs are allocated and what costs can be allocated to legacy fund projects. When I talk about administrative costs, I mean indirect costs, overhead costs, institutional costs. It goes by a number of different names, and they're all kind of the same thing. It's it's like the rent for the building or the lights or the parking lot or the top management within an organization or the cost of the photocopier or, you know, those kinds of costs. When we started doing our audit work, and we've really pretty much stuck to this belief ourselves, is that that requirement in the law that the cost be directly necessary for, I'm getting mixed up, I'm getting to be like Judy, I'm sorry, directly related to a necessary for, we felt that that was really intended to limit the way that legacy money could be used, and especially to the extent that legacy money would be used to pay for the typical operating costs of a state agency, that there needed to be a tighter connection there if legacy money was going to be used for those typical operating costs like lights and heat and that kind of thing, and that the whole point of it was to maximize the amount of money that was being able to be put towards specific projects. So our first audit started bringing up these issues about allocations, and I know that we did go through the percentage caps and different kinds of avenues, but really the issue has not gone away. In the last few years, the legislature asked the Department of Management and Budget to provide guidance to state agencies, and that guidance tended to not really define where is the line where something where you can use legacy money and where is the line where you can't use legacy money for that type of a typical operational kind of cost. MMB really pointed to that legacy dollars, the idea of the requirement was to promote efficient and effective use of legacy money and maximize program dollars, but then they say, but that doesn't make legacy money unique from any other money that is appropriated, that every dollar the state spends for an appropriation has the same kind of requirement. You're never allowed to spend money on something that's not directly related, not necessary for. You're still kind of under the same requirement. So we couldn't see how the legacy requirement, you know, when the law says you can't use the money for indirect costs except to the extent that those costs are directly related to and necessary for, we couldn't figure out what's the part that you can't use the money for. So the guidance by the Department of Management and Budget, we didn't think really better defined how the money could be used. And so actually right now we're kind of at a point, kind of at an impasse with state agencies and with MMB, where we're not sure if our definition is going too far overboard, and we're holding a standard that the state agencies that management and budget, they don't really define it that way. They don't understand it that way. So we're kind of looking towards a good discussion this year with the legislature to provide some clarity for all the parties involved about what the limitations are with this requirement, what it really means, so that when we go out and do our audits, we have good criteria to audit to, and we can really tell you whether or not compliance is happening or not. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just end on a couple of quick points. Number one, when I saw Representative Green, I first apologized to him because he has been one of the really strongest advocates of our reports and agencies following our recommendations. And he sponsored, and you, the legislature, enacted a provision that requires us to issue a list annually of those agencies that have not resolved the concerns, the findings, the noncompliance that we have found in past reports. And a draft of that has been sitting on my desk for a while. I've been working on some other things, but I did apologize that it isn't out yet, and I know that there are many people in the audience here who wonder when we're going to issue that list, because here's the importance. What you passed is that it says in the law that if the legislative auditor has not determined that an agency has resolved a past noncompliance issue, they are no longer eligible for legacy money. So you, in a sense, put the will of the legislature into the judgment of the legislative auditor, and we're going to need to talk about that. But I do really appreciate the fact that Representative Green has been a great advocate that when you get this money, and as I said earlier, there are strings attached. The legislature put them there. The people of Minnesota put them there, and you need to follow them. One of the things that has delayed that report is what we've been talking about. We have found noncompliance, for example, with the directly related to and necessary for provision. But should our judgment that they're in noncompliance determine that they're no longer eligible for funding? I think, frankly, ultimately, that's a decision you will have to make. So we're going to have a lot of conversations about that this year. And I want to just end by illustrating why this is so complicated and difficult. DNR, let's just take DNR. DNR is always good to talk about, right? Before the legacy amendment, they had a building, they had staff, they had trucks, they had cars, they ran an operation. And they paid the bills out of what you gave them. Then legacy money came along. And they started having additional work to do. And I think their view was, and I think it's supported by the MMB provision, then legacy money should start to support some of that overhead, some of that rent and lights. Let's take, for example, the fact that they have a legal department. And the department says, well, somebody's got to pay the bills for the lawyers here. And so if we get 10% of our budget, let's say, or 20 or 30% from legacy money, maybe 20 or 30 or 10 or whatever that percentage is should pay for the lawyers that we've hired. Now, maybe you still have the same number of lawyers that you had before the legacy money, so you potentially have a constitutional issue. But our concern is also, did any of those lawyers work on a particular project? Were there any administrative expenses from that building, from those lawyers, related to that particular project? Mr. Chairman, you mentioned purchasing land and easements. So if we saw that, yes, out of this $10 million appropriation, you had to use lawyers to design contracts and agreements on a easement or a purchase of land, yes, that's directly related to and necessary for that activity that you appropriated specific to that. But let's say there were no easement purchases or land purchases that year, but they still had other projects. But they didn't use the legal department on those. Is it still okay to fund the legal department at that same percentage out of legacy money? Because that's the percent overall. The other issue, of course, is many agencies will tell you You, the legislature, have forced us to do that because you've cut our general fund appropriations. You, in fact, are using legacy money to support some of the stuff that used to be supported with general fund money. So what are we supposed to do? This is the argument that's gone on since the legacy amendment was enacted, since we issued that report, and that's why I said it's still an ongoing issue. And with that, Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to try to elucidate this a little further and certainly answer your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you. Is there any questions from Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. It's always interesting. We do read your stuff and listen, and appreciate Mr. Representative Green's efforts as well. I was honored to be on the Lasard Sams after the passing of Representative Dill. Speaker Dow put me on with Representative McNamara, and this last cycle was just a pretty neat cycle to me, and hopefully you folks are listening and the other groups are paying attention, because there was a couple of things that really stood out to me this year. There was a group that hadn't spent money and were asking for more money, and Lasard Sams, the committee, said, you know, you need to finish what you're doing and before you, you know, play forward. And so I thought that was really good. And there was another project with the conflict that actually had been given money, and then they decided that to pull the money and not to give to that group because of clear conflicts or perceived conflicts, or I thought it was pretty clear. But anyways, I thought it was really good of the citizens that are on the committee and the legislators, but the staff to figure that all out. And then you know, like you mentioned, the administrative is always tricky, and the Lasard Sams, I'm always impressed, and often it's the citizens pick it up by reading the reports, and they really do grill the groups. Do you need that Bobcat? Do you need, you know, different equipment? And it's I'm often really impressed with the questions that are put forth by the staff and the citizens on that committee. But I think your committee here now will be impressed with the scrutiny that's, you know, and that's 33% of the fund, and I think they're really doing a good faith effort. It's not perfect, yes, and it's complicated, and will continue to be, but it's certainly people are trying.
I also was on Lasard Sams before Representative McNamara, and I appreciated the thoroughness that they did in vetting everybody's proposals. So with that, any other? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the staff of the legislative auditor, I want to say thank you. I'm probably the guy who has those 15 different books. I know I've asked for quite a few, and they were very good. They were instrumental in the bills that I wrote, so I really appreciate those. And I look forward to the ones that are coming out. The one statement I'd like to make is that I understand that you know, the responsibility for you is big, but I would also say that the legislature did vote on those amendments and those to the legacy amendment. So the decisions that you have aren't really to look at, I guess, and say, will this affect the legacy fund? Because that's already been decided. There, the decision that you make or that you're looking at is was there a violation? And then it comes back to the legislature, and we'll deal with the violations and where to go from there. This is really serious to me. This is something that the people voted on for our Constitution. And I have many complaints from my district as to how the money's being spent and where it's being spent and what's happening in our area because of it. So I do look forward to that that list when it comes out, and I thank you again for what you've done.
Thank you. Any other questions for the state auditor? Hearing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Very enlightening. And now we have management and budget.
Thank you.
LMP. Welcome to our committee. Please give your name before you give your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Ashley Reisnauer from Minnesota Management and Budget. I'm the Executive Budget Officer for the Environmental Area.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Alicia Cowell from Minnesota Management and Budget, a team leader in the Budget Division.
Welcome.
And I believe you have handouts in your packet with our slides. Many of these have been covered by others, so we will go a little bit quicker through some of the initial ones. But as others have talked about, the legacy funds were established by a constitutional amendment in 2008. The sales tax was raised by 0.3%. Currently, that is projected to raise about $350 to $350 million annually from fiscal year 18 through 21. And to date, over $2.2 billion has been appropriated from these funds. Again, as was already talked about, the Outdoor Heritage Fund gets about 33% of, well, gets 33% of the projected sales tax revenue, as does the Clean Water Fund. For this upcoming biennium, fiscal years 18 and 19, that's expected to be $250 million to the Outdoor Heritage Fund as well as to the Clean Water Fund. Parks and Trails, which receives 14.25%, is projected to receive $93 million in sales tax revenue in this upcoming 18 and 19 biennium. The Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, which receives 19.75%, is projected to receive about $128 million in fiscal years 18 and 19, that biennium. So total over this upcoming biennium, about the legacy sales tax raise is about $651 million across the four funds. Many have already talked about the different purposes of the funds. They each have their own stated purpose, so I'll gloss over that slide. I think it's number four in your handout. And move straight on to number five. The top four recipients over the course of these funds have been the Department of Natural Resources, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, or BOWSER, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and the Minnesota State Arts Board. Since the beginning of the legacy funds, DNR has received about 39% of the funds from a combination of the Outdoor Heritage, Clean Water, and Parks and Trails funds. BOWSER has received about 17% through a combination of the Outdoor Heritage and Clean Water funds. The Pollution Control Agency has received about 9% through the Clean Water funds. And the State Arts Board has also received about 9%, the Arts and Cultural Heritage. And it's important to note, and of course, as has been talked about, that a significant portion of the legacy funds are pass-through funds, that they're granted to entities outside of state government, so to local government entities, other nonprofits, et cetera. Moving on to how appropriations are made, this was mentioned as well. Some of these funds have councils that make recommendations for the use of the legacy funds. In the Outdoor Heritage Fund, it was mentioned that the Lesser Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council makes recommendations on these funds, and the legislature appropriates funds. These have typically in the past been one-year appropriations, just annual appropriations. But the average length of appropriations of their ability or their availability tends to be longer. So, for example, in the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the average length of the appropriations is about 4 years, meaning that funds that are that are appropriated in fiscal year 15 might be available as long as through fiscal year 19, depending on how it's stated and how the language has been written. Similarly, in the Clean Water Fund, the Clean Water Council makes recommendations, and the legislature appropriates funds. Again, these are typically one-time biennial appropriations for the 2 years. And the average length of appropriations in this fund is about 3.5 years. So again, appropriations are made, but the availability of those funds for spending may be longer than just the biennium. In Parks and Trails, as was mentioned, the Parks and Trails Legacy Funding Work Group develops some of the near-term recommendations. The funding is allocated to three systems: the State Parks and Trails, which is administered by DNR, and through the agreement receives about 40% of the appropriations. The seven county metro area parks and trails administered by the Metropolitan Council receives another 40%. And then the outstate parks, which are coordinated by the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails, which receives about 20%. So that, as was referred to before, the 40-40-20 split is how those appropriations tend to be split out to those different areas. Similar to the Clean Water Fund, they're normally one-time biennial appropriations, spanning the 2 years, but again, the average length of availability is about 3 years in this fund. The Arts and Cultural Heritage one does not have a central advisory work group. The legislature hears requests and appropriates funds. There are some lead organizations tend to be the Minnesota State Arts Board, the Historical Society, and the Center for Humanities. These, again, like the Clean Water and Parks and Trails funds, have typically been one-time biennial appropriations. And the average length of appropriations in this fund is about 2 years. So tracking spending of appropriations, the legacy funds highlights the difference between the appropriation and expense. So while various...
Representative Torkelson has a question while you're waiting for your microphone to fix it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I should probably know this, but how is it determined which funds the governor makes recommendations for and which ones he doesn't?
I believe it's been historical precedence, just which ones he's historically made recommendations on.
So how did, Mr. Chair, how did we get started? Who set the...
I don't have that information, but I will look into it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So as far as tracking the availability of appropriations, as I mentioned that... the difference between appropriations and expenditures is really highlighted in the legacy funds. Appropriations that may be made in 1 year may be available beyond the biennium. So agencies track individual projects and programs, and it was mentioned that some of the status of that is maintained on the Legislative Coordinating Commission's website, the Minnesota Legacy, to get more information on the status of projects. MMB tracks the appropriation spending at the fund and agency level. Because of the length of time of the availability of appropriations, the main concern is that funds that have been appropriated aren't accidentally reappropriated. So in the consolidated fund statement, which MMB releases in November and February every year, it's assumed that the expenditures happen in the biennium for which they're appropriated, and that in the expenditures happen in the year they're appropriated for in the out years. So that means that in the current consolidated fund statement, all the existing appropriations are assumed to be expended at the end of fiscal year 17 across those. One of the important things to note about the legacy funds is they do rely on a single revenue source, the sales tax. So when the sales tax fluctuates, it does impact the availability of resources and tends to put pressure on the bottom line. The table in front of you on slide 11 represents just an example of how the projected sales tax revenue for the 16 and 17 biennium has changed since the November 15 forecast. So again, in the November 15 forecast, when you're looking, for example, at the Outdoor Heritage Fund, you can see that the sales tax revenue for that biennium was projected to be $208.6 million. As it's been updated over time, that projection for that biennium has been decreased. So currently in the November 16 consolidated fund statement, it's estimated to be about $199.2 million. So you can see that, again, for this very one period of time, the projected revenue for this time has decreased by about 4.5%. It's important to note that sales tax revenues are expected to increase year over year. They're just not increasing as fast as originally estimated. And so given the fluctuation in revenue, you know, maintaining a reserve tends to be a prudent financial policy. The last slide in here looks at the current legacy funds available for appropriating as shown in the November 2016 consolidated fund statement. These, of course, will be updated for the February forecast. These represent the sales tax revenues and account for any available carry forward or other obligations. And so the table in front of you looks at each fund with the annual the amount available for fiscal year 18, fiscal year 19, and then the biennium. With that, thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any questions?
Representative Perkelson.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. We've had some issues in the past with the 5% recommended reserve, and I think a lot of that is a result of the biennial nature of some of these funds. Can you address that?
Can you tell me more about your question?
Well, you recommend that we have a 5% reserve left on the bottom line, and we have had at times run into losing that reserve because of the changes in sales tax revenue. Is there something that your office would recommend that we should do differently to avoid that problem in the future?
Well, I think the funds have, different funds have maintained different levels of reserves, and so I think MMB does agree that maintaining a reserve is prudent financial policy, especially given the table showing that how the sales tax revenues have changed, the projections. I can't speak to a specific percentage right now. But.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, just to clarify, MMB doesn't have a specific policy, a reserve policy related to the legacy funds. The Outdoor Heritage Council has historically maintained a 4.5% to 5% reserve, but MMB at this time does not have a policy on the legacy funds. We are considering it, but at this time we don't have one.
Well, I'm just curious where the 5% came from. It didn't come from you folks.
Representative, I think that was the 5% has historically been an option that's been put forward with information given out so that people could look at a scenario in which a 5% reserve was maintained.
Thank you.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is this chart on 12, does that include like reductions because we have shortfalls?
It does.
Okay.
Yes.
And then what's the difference, Mr. Chair, between the numbers on page 3 and the numbers on page 12?
Mr. Chair, Representative, page 3 shows only the sales tax revenue that will be coming in. It doesn't account for some of the other obligations that are already in the fund that you mentioned, and some of the other, there's a small amount of interest income that comes into the fund as well.
So just to clarify that, I'm sorry. So if we look at these numbers on slide 12, if setting aside this issue of the reserve, that's the amount that's available after allowing us to make up the shortfall?
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions, ma'am? Seeing none, thank you very much for a very enlightening presentation.
Thank you.
And with that, we're about finished with all our questions and presentations. I have a couple little points of order. I'd like to welcome Mary Murphy to our committee.
The late Mary Murphy? Mr. Chair, I'm so apologetic about my tardiness. I didn't expect it to be that.
Just having your presence.
But I didn't expect 3 inches of snow on the sidewalk either this morning when I woke up. Or that the snowplow had already gone by and there was 10 inches of snow at the top of the driveway.
You got a lot more snow than we did.
And so it wasn't a good morning.
I can appreciate that. And I'd also like to say, Anna Wills on Friday is going to have twins, and we congratulate you and wish you well. And we're anxious to find out the results. I really think it's going to be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, they're already named. Sorry. A boy and a girl having C-section on Friday, so I will be gone for recovery for a few weeks, but eager to be back, and I'll try to stay on top of things as much as I can from home and stay engaged in the work that we're doing here. So.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else coming forward to committee? Seeing none, word.